Well, hello and a warm welcome to this month's IASB podcast, where we bring you the latest insights from our board meetings. I am your host, Neely Shaw, the Executive Technical Director at the IASB. And as always, I'm joined by our Chair and Vice Chair, Andreas Barco and Linda Mizon-Hutter. Welcome.
Thanks. Hi, Neely.
Hi, Neely. Hi, y'all.
So this is our December podcast, the last one of 2023. And I think you all probably heard that sigh. It's been a long year. It's gone by fast, but it's been a long year. And this episode, we're going to get you up to speed with our last board meeting of the year. We've discussed 7 projects this month, but we will focus on 2 in particular, as well as give you an update on the IASB work plan. And then as we bid goodbye to 2023 with our final podcast, we'll also give you some key developments to be on the lookout for in the first half of 2024. And then we have a fresh announcement to make about something we're adding to our podcast in 2024. Linda and Andreas, you probably don't know what that is yet, so stay tuned, all of you. And I'm sure the suspense is going to kill you. So, okay, well, let's start with our work plan update. So in December, the IASB discussed the start of 2 projects, the post-implementation review of IFRS 16 on leases and a maintenance project on hyperinflationary presentation currency. So Andreas, let's start with IFRS 16. Maybe if you could just give a quick background on what that even is, and then what we plan to do with it.
Happy to do that. So IFRS 16 is a standard that significantly transformed lease accounting when introduced in 2019. Standard mandates entities to recognize assets and liabilities for leases exceeding 12 months. As you can imagine, that for many entities meant a substantial change, and it substantially impacted reported assets and financial leverage. Those who follow the IASB's activities know that we regularly evaluate the impact of newly implemented standards to ensure they work as intended. And in fact, we are mandated to do so by our due process handbook. We carry this out through post-implementation reviews of the new accounting standards in a few years after they have been implemented. So the board decided to commence the PIR of IFRS 16 in the second quarter of next year. We believe that this timing will allow sufficient time for financial statements for the year 2023 to become available for a more thorough and informed analysis. So that would give us 5 years in total.
Okay. We also discussed a project on the use of hyperinflationary presentation currency by an entity whose primary or functional currency is not hyperinflationary. And just to give you a little bit of background on where this discussion even came from, it started with the IFRS Interpretations Committee and a submission that came through in 2022, where some complexities related to hyperinflationary accounting were highlighted when a parent consolidates a non-hyperinflationary subsidiary. The IC had observed diversity in practice and concluded that under IAS 21 and IAS 29, a parent could either restate or not restate the subsidiary's results and financial position in terms of the measuring unit current at the end of the reporting period. So the committee considered, a related matter in which an entity that has a non-hyperinflationary functional currency presents its financial statements in a hyperinflationary presentation currency. So the Interpretations Committee referred this submitted fact pattern to the IASB, as well as the related matter, recommending a narrow scope amendment. So, Linda, what happened at the December meeting?
Well, the December meeting was a very exciting meeting. And in this particular matter, we decided, we considered the committee's recommendations, and we made some observations. The fact patterns are common in hyperinflationary economies, and the effect can be material. The feedback that the current requirements do not always represent the most useful information was discussed by the board. So to address these matters, the board decided to propose amending IAS 21 to require a reporting entity to translate all items, meaning assets, liabilities, equity items, income and expenses, including the comparatives, at the closing rate. The objective of this proposal would be to ensure uniform translation of items in a hyperinflationary currency using the closing rate, which is also known as the current measuring unit. The project addresses real-world challenges faced by entities managing dispersed inflation context, aiming to improve the clarity and comparability of the financial information. The board decided to proceed with an exposure draft because there appears to be a clear, dare I say, quick path forward. Quick is relatively quick. If feedback on the exposure draft raises matters we have not identified, then we may have to reconsider whether to continue with the project. But before the ED comes out, the board will discuss some remaining items on the proposal, such as disclosure requirements and also transition at a future meeting. So please stay tuned.
Thanks, Linda. And I think that point at the very end is just really key, that the board was clear. We're doing this project because we think we have an answer.
Exactly.
And if through consultation we find that there are more complexities, then there's a high likelihood that this project would be retired.
That's exactly right, Neely. We're trying to ring fence this and be very, very focused.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's everything on the work plan update. Let's move on to the two specific projects that we wanted to highlight for you. The first is the management commentary project. And in December, the board received a refresher on this project. So in and of itself, not that earth-shattering. What's really quite interesting is all the context around this project. So Andreas, can I turn things over to you to share a little bit more about the context for this project?
Of course. So the ISB published an exposure draft to update its management commentary practice statement in May 2021. So roughly 2.5 years ago, to address gaps in narrative reporting, including information about the company's long-term prospects, intangible resources, and ESG matters, and to incorporate innovations in narrative reporting, such as the integrated reporting framework. However, the landscape has changed substantially since the ED was published. Firstly, and foremostly, our sister board, the ISSB, was created. Secondly, the integrated reporting framework became part of our organization with the consolidation of the Value Reporting Foundation. The ISSB undertook a consultation on its agenda priorities. This consultation included questions about a project on integration in reporting, which could build on the management commentary project and could be conducted jointly with the IASB. The ISSB will need to decide its priority projects based on its consultation. Similarly, the IASB will need to decide its path forward on the management commentary project, given how much has changed since the exposure draft got published. To enable those decisions, and here's the punchline, the IASB and ISSB will hold its first ever joint technical meeting in London in January 2024. Isn't that exciting? This meeting will give the boards a chance to discuss the feedback on the ISSB's agenda consultation, although no decisions will be made at this stage. I must say this is really exciting. I'm really looking forward to having our colleagues join us, and I will encourage listeners who have been following this project to tune into our upcoming board meeting in January.
It will be a lot of fun to host them again. We hosted them back in May of this year, just having some strategic sessions, nothing technical. This will be our first technical meeting, so of course it'll be public. And the main question is, how do we fit 28 board members plus staff around our board table? But stay tuned
for
that.
But the second question is, how do we get them all a chance to talk?
Oh, yes. This is, we've left a lot of time on the agenda.
That's so good to hear.
Stay tuned, everyone. It's going to be a good meeting. Okay, so let's now move on to the second project that we wanted to cover in this podcast, and that is a maintenance project on power purchase agreements. The board added this project to the IASB's work plan following a submission that was made to the Interpretations Committee. Before we dive into the accounting, let's step back a little bit and talk about what a power purchase agreement is. This is a long-term contract between an electricity generator and a customer, and it can last anywhere between 5 and 20 years, during which time the power purchaser buys energy at a pre-negotiated or fixed price. More and more companies are entering into these contracts because of their commitments to reduce their carbon emissions. And so they're entering into contracts to secure renewable sources of energy. And what's interesting about these contracts is that if they are not able to consume all of the energy at the time of receipt, they need to sell that energy back to the grid. So that energy cannot be stored today. So the issue fundamentally comes to IFRS 9 and derivative accounting and the volatility that power purchase agreements introduce into the income statement. So with this background, Linda, do you want to share a few thoughts about what the board discussed in December?
I'm very happy to do that, Neely. So the issue is whether these agreements would qualify for the own use exception in IFRS 9, which would allow them to be accounted for as a standard purchase or procurement or a supply contract. And there's also a related issue with the virtual PPAs you mentioned, Neely, which really represent contracts for the differences in the prices. VPPAs are different as they do not contain the obligation to physically deliver energy, but they tend to be entered into for the same purposes and they achieve the same outcomes. Virtual PPAs meet the definition of a derivative. So the issue in this one for the board is about the hedge accounting requirements. So the board has decided to take a two-pronged approach to explore amending the own use exception in IFRS 9 for physical PPAs, and then to consider amending the hedge accounting requirements for virtual PPAs. Now, the board really emphasized the need for transparency in the disclosures if it proceeds with the amendments of the own use requirements so that to appropriately reflect the risk inherent in the contract. So stay tuned as the ISB has further discussions in the new year and publishes an exposure draft for feedback on its proposals.
Thank you, Linda. So, in this podcast, we've only highlighted two of the topics that we discussed at the board meeting, as well as some work plan updates. But if you're interested in digging deeper, or if you want to learn more about other projects that we have on our agenda, feel free to visit our website, where you'll find much more in-depth information. Now, before we look ahead to 2024, I have to remind our listeners about the exposure draft that we just published at the end of November. This is the exposure draft on financial instruments with characteristics of equity, or FICE for short. We're consulting with our stakeholders on the improved accounting requirements for financial instruments with both debt and equity features. The comment period closes on the 29th of March, 2024. So please do, if you have time, take a look at the exposure draft, and we would very much be interested in your input. Now, looking ahead to 2024, Andreas and Linda, could you outline some critical developments that our listeners can look forward to in the first half?
Of course we can, Neely. Linda, I'm happy to kick off this discussion, and are you happy to share additional aspects of our roadmap ahead?
Absolutely. Let's get started, Andreas.
Okay. So I want to briefly talk about the two IFRS accounting standards we will be publishing by the first half of 2024, and I think it's safe to say it's probably the second quarter of next year. The first one is IFRS 18, which will have the title Presentation and Disclosure in Financial Statements. We used to refer to the standard as our primary financial statements project. This is a direct response to an investor's call for greater consistency in structure, content, and presentation of financial data. It lays down the overall requirement for presentation and disclosures in financial statements, hence the name, and it introduces three new requirements to improve transparency, comparability, and usefulness of the information. Namely, we will include new subtotals, mandatory subtotals. We will give companies the ability to talk about their management-defined performance measures, provided that they reconcile them back to the nearest number in the GAAP financial statements. And we will have requirements about aggregation and disaggregation, so stay tuned. I should point out that this is relevant for all companies that apply IFRS accounting standards.
If I could also jump in and add that there is a lot to this final standard. And so the effective date is the 1st of January, 2027, to give companies sufficient time to plan and prepare for it.
That's right, Neely. It's a good reminder. That said, it looks like it is a long way out. we strongly encourage all stakeholders to familiarize themselves with the new requirements as soon as they are out, because 1 January 2027 is the effective date, but the standard, as many of our requirements come with comparative periods, so it actually will kick in a bit sooner. The second upcoming standard is the IFRS accounting standard for subsidiaries. That's also coming out in the first half of 2024 and will shortly follow our standard IFRS 18. The standard will reduce cost and simplify reporting, as it will enable accounting policies within groups to be unified, which will eliminate the need for dual accounting records. And it will reduce disclosures in eligible subsidiaries' financial statements, resulting in reduced time, cost, and effort involved in preparing and auditing those financial statements. I should point out that this is voluntary. So if a group decides that there should be uniform full IFRS accounting throughout the group, that's obviously possible. But this is a tangible result to actually reduce cost within a group. So I think it will be a huge improvement.
And Andreas, as you always say, even though our mission is focused on developing standards, we're not going to develop the standard and then just kick it over the fence and then abandon our stakeholders. So we are also focused very much on supporting implementation of both of these standards. And as part of that, there will be educational materials and webcasts. There's already been some webcasts, and there will be some more webcasts related to these accounting standards leading up to their launch and support thereafter. So stay tuned and make sure to visit our website for these valuable resources. So Linda, it's your turn now. Can you tell us what else is in store for our stakeholders in the first half of 2024?
Well, I absolutely can do that, Neely. We're going to have an exposure draft in early 2024, and this time we'll be asking for our stakeholders' feedback on a package of proposals designed to improve disclosures for mergers and acquisitions, and also somewhat simplifying the goodwill impairment test. So let me offer a little bit of context on this. We know and we've heard that the reporting for mergers and acquisitions has challenges for both investors and companies. On the investor side, accessing comparable and reliable information consistently across all companies and jurisdictions remains for them a very significant hurdle. Companies, on the other hand, are also concerned about the risks of providing additional disclosures that are forward-looking and potentially commercially sensitive. So, in developing this package, we have done our best to carefully weigh the delicate balance of giving investors clearer maps to better information against the cost and risk of implications of providing such information for companies. We've also listened to the concerns about the cost and complexity of the impairment testing for the group of assets generating cash flows from the post-acquisition business. We are making targeted changes in the impairment model.
Thanks, Linda. So, and now we have reached the point where we reveal a fresh new segment that we will introduce to our podcast in 2024. I feel like I should get a drum roll. All right. Well, thank you, Andreas. So we want to make our podcast even more interactive for our listeners by adding a dedicated Q&A segment. So we encourage you to send in your questions about the projects we discuss in the podcast or in our board meetings, or frankly, anything else. If you want to know what Linda's favorite IFRS accounting standard is, just ask the question.
Well, that's scary. I'm going to have to think about that.
Well, you love them all equally.
So I do love them all. I love difficult. All my children equally.
Yes, okay. Absolutely. So if you would like to send us a question, please do so. The email address is communications@ifrs.org. So communications with an S at ifrs.org. And we'll select a few questions or themes to feature in our next podcast. This will be your chance to be part of the podcast community. So that brings us to the end of this month's episode. If you have enjoyed this podcast, please subscribe, share, and rate us on your preferred app. Your feedback helps us improve and reach more listeners like you. And thank you, everyone, for being a part of our podcast series in 2023. And we look forward to sharing with you further insights in the next year. So until then, best wishes for the new year, and hopefully everyone will get a little bit of a break.
Sounds good to me, Neely. Best wishes to all for a good holiday season.
Thank you.
Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
Thank you.